Yeah, it's over there on the
Get Alan's phone. What iPhone do you got?
I like a 13.
I need a new phone. Mine's fucked up. I smashed mine. I throw my phone around like it's nothing, man.
Might have to open it for, or I'll give you that.
No,
you got
to
open. Whoa. Is that pillow bothering you? That back pillow?
I think it's all right.
That's good. All right. Ready to do this thing?
Hey, let's go, man.
Let's do it. All right, guys. Welcome back to Dying to Talk, episode 27. I got a very special guest this week. Good homie. Good friend here at Dying Industry Films. You might have seen him on the UFCB Instagram. The Silver Fox of UFCB. Alan Pachacchio. Did I say it right?
Awesome. Perfect.
I've been saying your last name wrong for like almost 2 years now, and I feel terrible.
That's fine. When the kids would go to school, I would say, don't forget to tell your teachers the whole gig about it's like a piece of chalk. I didn't give that to you. And sometimes it gets a little awkward because if I don't tell people up front and a couple of years go by.
Yeah.
But in our case, I haven't really heard you say it. So that was the first time.
Gotcha.
So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for the longest time, you were just in the contact as my phone as Alan Soccer.
Good enough.
So over the weekend, I had a table read for this project I'm doing, and they spelled my last name wrong. And so I normally don't care, but this one actor I worked with like 2.5 years ago was like, no, it's like a respect thing. Always make sure your name is spelled right and pronounced right. It is I get it. I'm not as like tightly wound about that, but it kind of bothered me a little bit. And I was just like, I'm going to say something, but I don't want to come off condescending. And I was like, I hope Mike Parrillo is going to bring it as hard as Mike Parrillo. And the director and the writer were like, what? I was like, you guys spelled my last name wrong. And I felt like such a piece of shit that I even said anything. Yeah. They're like, we're so sorry. I was like, no, I'm sorry. I'm going to change my last name now because I feel terrible. How you doing, Alan?
Doing awesome.
Kicking off. Hey, pleasure to have you on the show. Kicking off January, new year. I know you got a lot of things you want to talk about. That's why you're on the show. You're dying to talk to me and to our audience. But for those of you who don't know who Alan Pachacchio is, I'm going to give him the chance to introduce himself.
Sure. So Alan Pachacchio, I just started up my own consulting company a couple months back. It was born on August 23rd, 2024, mm-hmm. Incorporated Alanetics LLC after a long corporate career. So I'm just starting to build a business. I'm 4 or 5 months in and, relying on a lot of my relationships I built over the past, making mm-hmm. a lot of new relationships and just sorting through this whole piece of being an entrepreneur on my own. Cause the soccer club was my first, kind of jump into that, but mm-hmm. now I'm on my own and it's been a little bit scary at times, but it's also been a lot of fun.
So you spent, how many years did you spend working in like corporate America?
32.92.
Yes,
and I did the calcs.
So
it's legit.
Back when you were a younger Alan with brown hair and not silver, or you were blonde.
I was brown.
You was brunette. Back when he was brunette Alan,
yes.
You went to college for a bit. Like, what was what did you set out to do at a younger age? Sorry. I don't know why it took me so long.
No. When I was in school, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, and they were pushing me to stay at Penn State for, like, a PhD.
Oh, so you went to Penn State.
I went to Penn State, bachelor's and master's, and they're pushing me to do a PhD. But I just did not like being in the lab. Mm-hmm. I felt like, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. But then when I started working at IBM, I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to work in an organization, be part of the machinery, and I like the structure of it. And I like, the pay was good, but met a lot of really smart people, a lot of interesting people. So it wasn't so much I was going towards something. It was more like I knew I did not want to do a PhD in material science.
Now, just time frame, you don't have to like air out how old you are, but what year, like decade was this?
Early 90s.
So the early 90s. So that's like around the time that I know my father started working at IBM around that time. He didn't work there for that long. But in that time, now obviously my generation is something we talked about literally before we started rolling was we're finding like new ways to survive and do whatever. But speaking on that time when you were coming up, that was kind of the cultural norm was to find a job.
Absolutely.
Especially IBM.
Yes.
Like all my family worked for IBM. That was like the thing they all wanted to do. So would you say the cultural norm has definitely shifted, or would you recommend people my age to try to work for like an IBM or a big company for 20, 30 years?
Well, I think people can try for that, but that's not the reality anymore. Mm. I mean, I was the exception even from my era. I remember going back to Penn State after about 10 years, and I was still at IBM. My friends were like, oh, you know, who are you with now? And I'm like, I'm still with IBM. And they were stunned, even at that time in the 2000s, early 2000s, because they had already hopped jobs two or three times. So the way I see business evolving is that there's going to be a lot more independence. There's going to be a lot more consulting type jobs. There's going to be a lot more entrepreneurialism, because corporate America, you know, I mean, I had almost 33 years though, so I'm not going to say a negative thing about it, but I will say that that whole piece is now shifting dramatically. And I would not recommend anybody coming out of college thinking they're going to stay with a company for, you know, a mega long time. I just don't see that.
What do you think the change comes from? Do you think it's because of the birth of the internet, or and the fact that we're seeing all these other ways to like get by? Do you think COVID was a big factor in that, when everybody went from corporate to remote and now nobody wants to go back to work?
I would say those are both factors. I also think that what you're seeing is the companies are taking this less of a womb to tomb view, where, you know, they've taken away things like, you know, the medical subsidies have gone down year by year by year. Pensions now kind of a thing of the past. I have a small pension, but even that's pretty rare now. You know, some of the people who started in the heyday of IBM, you know, 50s, 60s and all that, they had really great golden parachutes. But, you know, a lot of those perks of corporate America are now kind of gone. But I will say that, like, the learning and the discipline and a lot of the process work and a lot of the, you know, access to really smart people was invaluable for me, though. You know, so I won't say anything negative about it. I would just say that, like, it's now over. And it's time for me to do something different.
Yeah.
That's the best way I would
say. And that's an amazing way to look at it, you know, especially spending that long working for a company like that. When you spend all this time working and then it's done, it's like, what do I do now? And where I work, one of my part-time jobs I have, I work with all retirees, and they all have a different reason why they're there. Some are there because they're out of the house. Some are there because, like you said, the pension or the 401k, whatever, didn't exactly pan out. But it's so interesting to me that, I don't know, would you say to a certain extent it kind of feels like corporations can sucker people in with that, like, hey, benefits, 401k, pension?
Well, you know, it's – in a way, but I think if I were talking to my younger self, I would just say, be prepared for the fact that a corporation, especially over 100, 200 people, this is my view of the world. Like, I haven't studied this, but my sense is that the corporate America, the view is profit. And if you listen to everything else about culture and we love our people, this and that, I think that's all a little bit disingenuous. I think corporate America is run by profit, and you have to keep that in mind, so that as soon as you, if you get to that point where you're not really super valuable to them anymore, you have to be prepared that the axe could swing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I answered your question. It's just add a couple things to this also. One is that, you know, it's the classical trade-off between security and freedom, right?
Yes.
With a big company, you have some security. Sometimes it's the illusion of security, but you also lose your freedom, right? You're going to live where they say you're going to live. You're going to do the job. You're not necessarily going to freelance. So now where I am is on the other side of it, where I have a lot of freedom, but I don't have the security. So now I have to sort out how I get my next gigs and how I line up my next jobs and all those things. So it's those balance points. And even in corporate America, there's no such thing as really, really security. I mean, you think you have it, but you don't. You have to be mindful of what's on the horizon. The other thing I would say too is that if I was talking to myself in 1991 joining IBM, and somebody said you'd be sitting here over 33 years later still living in Dutchess County after working all these years for them, I would have said, first of all, no way, you know, I'm not going to be that old ever. But second of all, like, you know, just it's, for me, it was a great career. I don't want to I don't want to come off as sound too negative about it. It was a great career, but it's over, and it's just time to move on.
Yeah. Would you find, now that it's time to move on, right, the security's gone, but the time is back, do you find that exciting or terrifying?
It's been mostly exciting. Like, when I was cut loose, I mean, I was a little sad.
Oh, so you were late. You were late.
Well, right? I was late. I was my position was eliminated.
Okay.
But I retired twice now, believe it or not. I retired from IBM and then the spinoff of IBM. So
was that Global Founders or
no Kindrel?
Kindrel, okay.
Kindrel.
The Global Founders has nothing to do with
Global
IBM
Founders
anymore,
right? has nothing. No, Global Foundries was it was like one of their plants spun off from IBM.
Because that's what my mother ended up working for before she retired was Global Foundries. Gotcha.
Yeah, Global Foundries. I mean, I was a little bit you know, they'd say, hey, your position's being eliminated. They say, don't take it personally. It's only business. You know, it's only business like the golfer. But, you know, it's really hard not to take it a little personally. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit upset. But I was in, like, the, I say, like, virtual or, you know, fetal position very, very short amount of time. Like, I was, like, I felt liberated. Yeah. I was in a brief period of mourning.
Yeah.
And then I snapped right out of it quickly.
Would you really say it's the timing, because you have two kids in college, right?
Yeah,
that's probably what really we were like, oh shit, because I'm assuming that's they're not paying for it.
Well, it was a little bit, you know, it's just a way of life that had to change for me. But actually, it was really odd the way the timing worked out. And I'm not one of these believers that, oh, it happened for a reason, timing this and that. I don't really believe to subscribe to all that. However, in my case, the fact that both my kids were going away to school around the time that happened was probably great timing for me, because it was like they left and then I had to focus on, all right, Alan, get your shit together, you know? So it kind of gave me a distraction when they left, as opposed to me just like laying in the, lying, I don't know.
Laying in the dark,
lying in the, you know, in the foyer, like listen, you know, crying like a baby because my kids were gone. Like it gave me like, all right, now, yeah, I miss them, but now I got to get my act together and figure out what's next for now me.
Yeah.
And they're off at school. They don't have to worry about this. But, you know, now I have to, like, get my act together.
Oh, and that's a good way to look at it. I mean, getting – leaving your job or losing your job after so long, I've – you know, like when my uncle and my mom got laid off from the school district during COVID and didn't really affect him too much. But when I was little, my dad got laid off from Gap.
Yeah.
That, like, crushed him.
Yeah.
And that goes back on that thing. It's just like we – and I think it's so ingrained in American culture – because I have friends that live over in Europe and they're like, I work 3 days a week and I have an apartment or whatever. And it's like, you have to work like 60 hours a week here just to fucking go to Chili's Saturday night. But it is just like you're cashing in your time for a paycheck you still can't afford to live off of. And when that fails or when that doesn't play out the way people expect. Now, I don't really know what people's plans are. I'm not a fucking mind reader. But that is like earth shattering. That's almost as earth shattering if you spend all your time working on like a film or a project and it sucks or it just falls apart. You know, it's just like, damn. But you ultimately have to make the choice of now what, or all right, fuck it. Like it's over.
Yeah.
And I think your route of that is very admirable, because now it is about like utilizing, because now you have all the time in the world essentially, because you're not cashing in literally years off your life and weeks for some company. Now it's all in your hands.
Sure. And actually the timing of this also is good for me, because I still like really feel strongly about like working, getting up every day and working, and I like the grind and all that stuff. I'm not at a point where I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know if I'll ever be at the point where I'm like, oh yeah, I want to have a traditional retirement. I like to be in the churn. I like to get things done and all that. So for me, you know, I'd say if I was like, it was like 5 or 7 years later, it might have been tougher to just say, hey, man, I have to start my own business. Like, I feel like I'm still very energized and young enough to do it at this point in time. So a couple of things I'll also mention that were going through my brain as we were talking to is that there's one classical quote that I've read. It's gone over and over in my mind, probably for about 10 years off and on. But it's that really manage change or change will manage you. And here's the thing about life. I'm going to give you a little life wisdom on you, right? Is that these things come at you, and we all think to ourselves in this weird way, like things aren't going to change, but then they do change, because that's all that's really inevitable. And it's that balance in life of like, how much do you jump out on your own and do your own thing and say, hey, I'm leaving corporate America, versus like it's coming at you. And that's a very difficult situation, because I was not willing to walk away from my salary at any point in time over those 33 years, you know? So like, I'm not a hero, but this happened to me. But at the same time, now that I have that deck or that hand of cards dealt with me, now I have to adapt to it. So I would say the biggest thing I would say to somebody who's, well, younger or older or whatever, is this like sense change and figure out at what points in your life you need to make some changes on your own versus what's going to happen to you. Very difficult concept to wrap your head around and instill in your daily life, because if you like, if you're working a job and it's good money or it's paying the bills, it's hard to walk away from that and say, oh, I'm going to make myself unemployed, right? That's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, and to add to that, I would say not only like making yourself making opportunities for change happening with being like doing a lot of internal work and external work. Like you said, you're getting up every day, you're working your ass off. A lot of people expect change to happen without any sort of like effort or energy going into it. And it could start with very like little things. I myself have made a lot of changes on the back end of like, I'm not on my phone anymore, like looking at social media. I'm playing video games a max of like 1 hour a day if I really want to, and I'm really just trying to utilize my time as best as I can.
The other thing I will say too is based on your point of you know, people want something. Like I would, when I was in corporate America, I would mentor a lot of people. They come to me like, hey, I want to be a data scientist like you. I want to get to distinguished engineer like you. And I said, okay, first of all, it's important to set your goals, your North Star. That's admirable and all that stuff. But are you willing, like you said, are you willing to make now the change? Because everybody thinks you save time or manage time. That is a fallacy. Time keeps coming. It's like being in a river and it just keeps coming at you. There's no stopping it or saving it or, you know, accumulating it. What you have to do is figure out the best way to adapt yourself to the fact that time goes on. So my point is, like, if you say, hey, I want to be a distinguished engineer, then I say to them, okay, you have 24 hours in a day. You have to figure out what things you have to do differently, or what do you add to your schedule that then allows you to get to that? Because when you add something to your life or your schedule, something else will invariably get removed. Like, you don't get this for free. You don't, like, so are you going to sleep less? Are you going to spend less time with your family? Are you going to work less? Are you going to do less exercise? And it sounds morbid or terrible, but that's the reality. So you can't take on something new in life unless you get rid of something. And to your point, because my son did a similar thing, like, we were going through the house when he was going back to UConn for the spring semester, his last one. And I said, all right, hey, Justin, you left your PlayStation in the basement. He's like, nah, it's just time waste. I'm leaving it here. I don't want to take it back to school. I was like, I was a little bit stunned because I wasn't expecting an answer. But like you, he's just like, hey, he wants to focus on his schooling, but he wants to focus on, you know, cultivating his YouTube channel and all that. So he's like, he left it behind. He just walked out of the house without it. And, you know, so you have to make those sacrifices.
Especially at that age. Like, I took my PlayStation. Like, that was the first fucking thing I packed. I'm like, I'm on that shit. But with the video game specifically, and then I want to bring up something my brother said to me the other day. What really scared, like, rocked my world was, like, on PlayStation, it tells you how many hours you've put into anytime you hover over a game.
Yeah.
So, like, Netflix has X amount of hours to watch Netflix, which is whatever, because, like, as an actor and as a filmmaker, it's, like, a good excuse to watch movies all the time. And plus, I watch movies when I do cardio. But I was, like, I played a skateboarding game, and it said I had over 482 hours into it. And I'm, like, I'd skateboard in real life. Now, I've definitely spent way more real life hours than video game hours, but that 482 hours, I was like, Michael fucking Perillo, could you have done anything else for 482 hours? But you don't realize how quick time goes by. Mm-hmm. I just turned 26 2 weeks ago, right? And I'm like, damn, I felt like we just fucking started Dying Industry Films last year.
Yeah.
Or we just shot our feature last, like, that's already almost 2 years ago. Dying Industry Films is 5 years old this year. Like, I dropped out of college 5 years ago. I'm like, holy shit. And plus turning 26, no more health insurance. So I got to, you know, that's another thing that, like, kind of woke me up to it.
It's compensation, right? And that's even with the corporate America view is that, you know, one guy, his name is Glenn Huffman. He told me this like 15 years ago. He said it's called compensation for a reason. And the way you have to look at a corporate job is you work the week, they pay you, done. That's over. They've compensated you for that week. They owe you nothing more. You owe them nothing more. And then it resets. And you don't really think of it that way because they tell you, oh, you get paid annually. But your annual pay could end on August 2nd or September 2nd, right? It could end because it's at-will employment. So to your point, it's that's why it's called compensation. because you're working and they give you money and that's, it's over. And that's why when people get this illusion that corporate America is all lovey-dovey and, you know, it's culture and it's about our people and all that, it's, that's a means to an end to get things done. But in reality, most companies don't really in their soul have a people mission. No. Now, there's some exceptions, but for the most part, it's about profit and Wall Street. And you just have to be aware of that. I'm not saying avoid it or not get a corporate job. You just have to be aware of the game, you know, that you're in.
Yeah, and I feel like on that specifically, like I think even more so, it's not even just corporate America. Like this is just America. Like that is Western, excuse me. That is just Western thought in its simplest form. And I feel like there's this really interesting statistic that pretty much it's like 75% of the world doesn't make over, I'm probably going to butcher this, it's either $1 or $10. I forget which one, and I know that's that is a different level of magnitude, 1 or 10. But the whole idea is that everyone in America, though, is above that 75% percentile. So it's like, so what is the, does the 70 other 75% of the world who doesn't have as much money, doesn't think about money as much, they just, what do? Like, do they just not exist? Like, what, like from our perspective, we might think that. Like, it's like, if you're, we're so focused on money and running on money that we don't think about just like your day to day connecting with your fellow man, connecting with your community, so on and so forth. And it's, yeah, it's definitely not a cultural thing. Absolutely not. It's a machine. Like, we're a machine. Yeah. Like, America's a machine.
The one thing that really reminds me of that, and this, I was in like such a, every once in a while I get in these, like, I'm pissed off at everything. Like, everything pisses me off mood. And I like 2 days ago was one of those moods, and we're watching football and I'm like, God damn it. Are people trying to sell me something every second of my fucking life?
Yes.
Like commercial, you pause the TV, another commercial pops up, you go on your phone, ad, or like all these, like I'm always researching like new gear to buy, whatever. Oh my God, you Google one thing about, like, for example, I just bought a Sony A6700, right? And I was trying to Google some setting. I'm like, how do I change this? All I'm getting is ads now and these fucking clickbait videos like, this is how you make your camera a beast in 2025. It's like, can we? And it, even with commercials specifically, I remember when I was a kid, commercials used to be like funny or they used to be like zany or whatever. Now it's like 3 seconds, buy this, it'll change your life. Buy this, it'll change your life. Yeah. Pay for my online course, it'll teach you how to be a videographer. Buy my online course, I'll teach you how to become an actor. It's like everybody that, there's like this weird, I don't want to use the word toxic, but this like obnoxious entrepreneur. Like, yeah, I think it's great. People should work for themselves. I work for myself and I think it's fantastic. I am never going to be like a snake oil salesman, like you have to buy my thing or whatever. Like, but that is like another, I don't know, I feel like it's another product of like corporate America, is like some people view that like the corporate world and go, I'm gonna be, do this but on like an individual, like micro scale, like I can do this too and I can fool like 30 people on Facebook into paying for my subscription thing that does fucking nothing.
Right.
I mean, Rocket Money, which is an app for managing your subscriptions, charges you a subscription fee to manage said subscriptions.
Well, so what I would say,
fuck. Sorry.
So one, no, that's okay. One thing to take away from this though is that the way to really build yourself for longevity in this world, because you're going to keep getting hit with that, and it's only getting worse, and especially because generationally, you know, we've all become addicted to some extent to our two-dimensional objects, right? Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I think in my stand-up act, I want to do this gig where I talk about virtual reality and how people are putting helmets on their head to experience 3D and 2D. Like, yeah, they're going to convert 2D to 3D. I'm like, who's the one coming? It's like, go hug a tree. Go outside, hug a tree. That's 3D. You know, like, get off your phones and your objects. You don't need a helmet on your head to tell you what three dimensions are in virtual reality. So we have this two-dimensional fixation with our gadgets. I do too. You know, there's no doubt about it. And I'm trying to wean myself off of that. But what I'm saying is that, like, with all this instant gratification work, one of the things where I think the pendulum hopefully will swing, or is, and I'm reaching a, you know, your audience here, is to say, you know, build your entrepreneurial businesses on your relationships. And don't think of them as a network. Don't think of the people in your sphere as a transaction. Don't treat them as a transaction. Treat them as people. Everybody you encounter, work on the relationship piece. And when somebody says, hey, I have 2,000 connections on LinkedIn, so what? No one cares. I mean, someone might see that as like, oh, you're trending, or you like you're viral, blah, blah, blah. But think about it from this perspective, is like, how are you building relationships with people? Because in the consulting world, as an example, that's really what gets people your foot in the door, right? They know you, they like you, they trust you. Yeah. That's just table stakes, right? And they're not just gonna, and sure, there's these get rich schemes and like these subscription-based models where they're, you know, they're cashing in. I won't bring up the, you know, unfortunate internet star from the fall. I know you have kind of like a negative connotation towards the one who got famous for her quick. Yeah. No, I'm not going to bring, I'm not even, I'm not going to
say that,
but I'm not going to bring up her name, no, or, good, you know, her good. Nickname. But what I'm saying is that there are those get rich quick schemes, but in reality, and this is the reason why I feel like I came out of the gate of my consulting business with three clients, is that I look back and reflected and my relationships were strong. Mm-hmm. And then I could go to those people and say, hey, I want you to hear what I'm thinking of doing. And I didn't go to them with a sell, because I'm not a natural salesperson, but what really gets you longevity in kind of the business world, I think, is your relationships. I could have probably made it further than I did by stepping on a few people, but I never did.
Yeah.
I just never felt right about it. So that worked to my benefit, either in a karmic sense, maybe I have some karma points, but it's really, relationships are critical. And there's sometimes you have to walk away from relationships, sometimes you have to reinforce them. But don't get in this illusion of thinking like, you know, you have this just because you have a big network of people. That's different than having strong relationships. You know, I think people should characterize their relationships. They should put them on like A, B, C, D, E, F list, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because it's really important. And, you know, we don't really talk about the science of relationships in that context. I mean, you don't want to go to like your significant other, girlfriend, hey, you know, you're on the C list now. I hope you can move. You know, you don't want to use it in that way. She's on her own list. But so anyway, I'm just saying that, like, I think that's an important part of any business, really, not just consulting. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, you want to make it in corporate America, it really comes down to relationships. It's very critical.
Now, speaking on that, this is something that my dear producer Spencer has said to me a bunch of times, and we constantly have to remind ourselves of that. And I want your opinion on this, if you want to take over. But basically, the allies and neutrals, no enemies.
No, yeah. I honestly, I don't know where that that might actually be a semi. I say a semi original thought, because I'm sure it's been had before, but I didn't have it from someone else's thought. But nobody does. I'm just like, exactly. But yeah, but no, yeah, I'm just like, if you're putting out negative energy at all, it's going to come back to you somehow. If you're hating on somebody, they're probably going to end up hating on you. And you can just drop all of that and just put it all towards positive energy. Put all your energy towards your allies that you really got in your corner. And if they're not your allies, then they're just people, and it's fine, and it doesn't matter. And maybe they'll become your ally one day, and it's great, or they won't, and they'll be a neutral, and it's still great. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, there's no enemies, and it's really helpful. Yeah.
This is a fascinating point. We could probably do a whole podcast on this alone.
I'm very amazed at how well this has been going so far. This is, like, fantastic. Well,
I've done some study on this, not a ton of study, but this is the way I look at it, right? You have kind of this continuum of people in your life, and some float in and out of different ranges. Some are in your inner circle, some are ride or die, some are like you think they're ride or die, but then they go and blab something to someone else, and you know this person's gonna never want to do me wrong, but things got around the horn to my daughter or whatever, you know. And you got like, I'm gonna hold back on what I say to them. But the way I see it this way is that, like, it's important to kind of like know where people are on your spectrum. And to be honest with you, it's not really good to completely surround yourself with all allies. And I'll tell you, because that's not the way the world really works. So, like, a step below ally to me is somebody who's like, oh, they're in the mix. They're kind of in this indifferent list. They're not going to hurt you. They're not going to help you. You're friendly, blah, blah, blah.
Like cordial. A neutral, yeah.
Like, they're kind of like a neutral, right? And by the way, people can move up and down on the spectrum, right? And then there's adversaries. And now an adversary is somebody who is going after your piece of cheese with you. Like, they're competing with you for a job. And they're an adversary, But they're not really an enemy because you're just going after the same piece of cheese, right? But you have to be mindful of the competition because with, you know, if you're not mindful of competition, you go out of business as an example.
Yeah.
Then there's the enemy. The enemy is somebody who you're pretty certain has vindictiveness towards you and would hurt you if they could. And they have hurt you, but they've specifically hurt you. This is a very fine line of gray. They've hurt you specifically to hurt you. Not they hurt you because, oh, we broke up, blah, 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 I don't love you anymore, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's different. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, they are genuinely want to hurt you. They will get up in the morning and say, I want to hurt this person mentally or physically or whatever it is. That's an enemy. And I think that it's actually good in your life to have a whole spectrum of people because enemies and adversaries teach you patience. Not your allies. Your allies do not teach you patience. And it's just like competition. If you don't have some people in your life who are going to really test your patience and make you go, gosh, what the fuck? You know, like, you need some people like that to kind of keep you balanced and even. And when, and sometimes I see it with parents, you know, they want to surround their kids with only their friends. Put Janie or Johnny on the soccer team because that's where all his friends are. Like, I don't think that's the greatest thing to do because you want to experience like the randomness of life. Like when you get out in the real world, like you're not going on your coach all the time. Hey, or your manager. Hey, I don't really like Janie. I want to work with Johnny. Yeah. You know, like it doesn't really work that way. But back to your point, the spectrum is very important. And I think it's good to have a balance. Don't overcharacterize people, but know the difference between, you know, indifference and adversary and enemy, and because you can get hurt if you're off.
So now let's talk about Allenetics. Like, what are you offering to the people, man? How can we get you more clients?
Well, so it's still forming, and actually, I had struggles with like, what do I put on my website, and what's my 30-second elevator pitch, and what's my 5-minute pitch. And to the degree where I almost made stand-up jokes over it, because when people say, hey, what do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well just like stick a hot poker in my eye. That is like a tough, tough question. But essentially what I'm doing, you know, I'll try to kind of summarize it, is the way I see Allenetics Consulting, which by the way is a side story, is that apparently my mom almost named me Christopher. But, you know, back in the day, you know, you had to, like, write out your whole name. And she was like, oh, that's too much for a kid to write Christopher Pachacchia every time on the, you know, the assignment. So she didn't give me a middle name, which I thought then I would get a middle name when I got confirmed. And I got a name, but it's not legal.
What's your confirmation name?
It's Anthony. You know, but okay, it's not Alan legal. Anthony.
Alan, right. Sounds so like a professional wrestler.
Alan Anthony. It sounds like a Mark Anthony. No. Anyway, so my mom named me Alan. And now I parlayed it into a name of a business. And it's a little quirky, Allenetics, but you know what? I like it, man.
There's personality to it. People have opinions about our name all the time. One, thank you for sharing your opinion, but two, I don't care. Like, it's like, I didn't want to name my company like Superior Media. It's like, that's not what we are.
Fucking new wave.
New wave audio and just visual, kidding, whatever. I don't know. There's a company out there. I'm not trying to shit on you. I didn't, you know, but like,
new wave is mine.
You know?
Well, so
is it?
So,
oh, my bad, my.
So I ended up. I actually said this to Justin, my son Justin, probably about 8 or 10 years ago. I'm like, you know, I really want to start my own company someday, and I told him Allenetics, and like he remembered that when I was starting it back up again. I was like, hey, I'm gonna start a company. He's like, oh, Allenetics. I was blown away that he remembered that because that was such an obscure moment from like 2015. But anyway, I would say the way to think about it is that my company, I think of it as like a triangle. So where I start with people, and this is very important, is that it's very important to understand what clients or potential clients' concerns are before you want to sell anything. You have to understand, you have to listen, you have to observe. Because so many times in my career, I've seen, you know, the IBM sales team come and go, oh, we have a solution for you. They don't even know what the problem is, and they're ready. It's on the truck. And this is sales. Like, this is not IBM. This is just sales, right? Got something on the truck for you. So it's very important to understand and observe and listen. And they say, I won't tell you who said it because it might tell you a little bit about my spiritual beliefs. So I don't want to get into that. But they say that we have two ears and a mouth so that we listen more. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to observe. However, the next piece is where Alan Ickx really comes in, is I love to analyze problems. I love to produce facts, not instincts, intuition. I don't want to go by hearsay. I want to see data, factual data. So that's where, like, if one of my clients says, hey, I think that our cycle time or our responsiveness is long because of rework, I want to see that evidence. I don't want to just go by intuition. I want to see the facts. So the first part of my business is really, it's data science, but it's really analyzing problems, trying to understand where the opportunities are. I tend to specialize in manufacturing because my IBM roots, but you know, it's what they call in the biz, you know, business to business, B2B. Like, I'm trying to work with other businesses, not consumers. Yeah. You know, I'm not trying to sell a widget to the masses. So that's the analysis part. And then what I call the engineering part is basically the solution, which is like, okay, you have this problem, you have this rework problem, now you should do A, B, and C. This is what you should do. And you're paying me for this advice, so you should take it. You should do A, B, and C. Now, we might negotiate, well, you can only do A and B. This is also where an important concept of change comes into play. Mm-hmm. Because we talked a little bit about managing change, or change will manage you. Individuals and organizations have a certain capacity for change. And if you try to do too many things at once, even though they all look good on paper, they could get rejected. So it's very important to be careful and thoughtful about how you put your solutions into play, because if you do too much at once, it's disorienting for a company. You know, whether it's 50 people, 100 people, 300, 3,000, it doesn't matter. So that whole change management, the capacity and the rate and change of pace is critical. Then the third piece is really, you know, the bureaucracy of big business has taught me this, is that it's important to have repeatable processes, cadence, flow, review certain things on a monthly basis, check the trends. It's that, like, rinse repeat piece that I call governance, but it's really the management structure. How do you take, okay, you identified an opportunity, you implement a change, now how do you actually measure it and put the management focus on it so it doesn't just wither away? Because that's the other piece that doesn't always stick in consulting business, is the stick-to-itiveness of it, right? Now, you might go 6 months down the road and go, hey, you know, geez, we had a 20% improvement. That's cool. Or, geez, we put all this energy in and, oh, something didn't work. You know, it's like we're flat. Like, we haven't really improved. And that's where you might have to start the cycle again, or maybe you missed something or some other conditions change. So what I'm saying is, like, it's like a phase-wise approach. You have to understand the issues up front, create solutions, and then make sure that they're put in place in a repeatable way across the management system, because if they're not, then you've just spent time and energy. It's wasted. So that's kind of like the business cycle that I see for my company, which is still emerging.
Observing the facts, right? So one thing that I'm constantly trying to, like, mindset I'm trying to, like, instill in myself is, like, stop speculation. Like, just, it's not healthy. It's like, you don't, and that goes with back to the relationship thing of, like, why didn't this person answer the text? It's like, what do they think? It's like, do you think one, speculation is, like, a fucking killer in any sort of business, because you just said it's, like, facts-based stuff. And that, but also, we are an art-based company necessarily. So, like, everything we do is kind of more opinion-based, I think, rather than fact. Because, like, you can shoot something and it's, like, clearly this is wrong or clearly that's right. Or it's just, like, people interpret it differently. So I'm asking you, I'm consulting, I'm getting free consultation advice, because, hey, we're going to pay for your parking. So, you know, that's about the same.
Well, thank you.
What would you say to myself, Spence, the dying industry films of, like, the speculation thing, and, like, how would we identify a fact versus, like, a speculatory, like, opinion?
Yeah, that's a really hard question to answer. All right, good. But I'm going to give it a whirl, which is that, you know, there's some parallels to what you guys are doing versus what I would do. Uh-huh. Not a ton, but there are some. And the one parallel I was thinking as you were asking the question is this whole idea of, like, you have a concept and you think it's going to work, but you have to still run the experiment. You have to put it into place. And this is where sometimes artists, I think, struggle. So as an example, when I did my stand-up comedy class in last fall, It's my first foray into something, you know, like those artistic, let's say, in a structured way for more than just, you know, I wasn't just playing the flutophone for a week in third grade. You know, this was like more than that, right? This was like a little more substantial. And I went in, and the comedic instructor called these, he called them golden darlings or something like that. He said, you'll come in with material. You think this is like great. You've reviewed it in your head. And then you play it out, and it's like, it's a dud. He said, so sometimes you have to take your little darlings, I forget the phrase they use, and you have to toss them overboard. He said, because basically you have to prostitute yourself for the laugh. You do. You have to. He told me, Alan, you have to stop thinking like an engineer. Okay. You can use a little bit of, you know, be a little liberal on your facts here because straight facts all the time are really not that funny. Right. The story is like, here's the truth and here's how here's what happened, but I'm going to embellish it a little bit. So that it took me like 4, 5, 6 weeks to get into that. But what I will say is that through that experimentation, I realized, oh, that wasn't so funny, but this is funny. Mm. So what you guys do in a way is you have a concept and you put it together and you're not really sure what reaction you're going to get. Now, there's probably times where you'll go through and instinctively go like, this is going to win. Like, I know this one's going to win. Or you go like, I'm not so sure, but we'll put it out there so that we have content. So I would say the hardest piece about artwork, the art form that you guys have, is like, you don't really, it's a little less scientific in terms of how people are going to respond and what they're going to respond to. So hopefully that's.
No, that was kind of like, yeah, all right. I honestly, that was a test to see if you're really about this consultant thing, which I could tell that you are. So you mentioned stand-up comedy. Is that something you've always wanted to do, or is that just like, because now you have that time, not working for IBM anymore, he said, fuck it. I've always wanted to try it. Another former guest of the podcast, Sam Affron, who I'm calling you out. You said you were going to do it last summer. It's been a year, and you haven't yet, Sam. So get to it.
Well, so it wasn't really, and by the way, I'm pretty anal retentive. I don't know if you figured this out, but when it comes to like bucket list things and all that, it wasn't really on my bucket list. But then I put it on my bucket list and crossed it out when I was done with it. That's kind of like the engineering. Okay. However, the seed was planted probably about 10 years ago because I was in my local hometown. I was elected into my local hometown Hall of Fame. Not as an athlete.
Down in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania. Wow. As an athletic supporter. But not exactly an athletic supporter. It was like lifetime achievements, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada.
Is that the old term for a –
It's out of the movie Greece. Yeah, there you
if
go.
You can't be an athlete, be an athletic that was one, supporter.
And I'll get back to that in just a moment. But Eve Arden, I think, was the Eve Arden classic line. So anyway, I get this call in like 2015. Hey, Alan, you're going to be elected into your hometown Hall of Fame. And man, it still gives me goosebumps because it was the best thing. Like, it was so much fun. Yeah. It was so much fun. And most of the guys who were presenting were like, you know, 20, 30 years older than me. There was actually a posthumous person who didn't present, by the way. So, you know, they were like, hey, that was a joke, dead.
Yeah, posthumous. Yeah, okay. I get that.
Dying, dead. Yeah. I figure you know all the lingo about death. But anyway, so they were like, hey, you're going to get 10 minutes on stage. You got to give a speech. So we'll give me a little guidance on the speech. They're just like, well, you could either be, said most of the guys are nostalgic because this is like glory days. They're going down thinking about all their past achievements and, you know, life that's mostly behind them. Or you could try to be funny. And I was like, I want to try to be funny. That's what I want to do. When I go up there, I don't want to be like glory days. I want to be funny. So through that whole, you know, preparation and delivery, I got the bug of like, I want to be funny on stage. Because there was like a room full of like 200 people at this banquet. I'll send it to you and you can not watch it. So anyway, it would be 14 minutes. Like I blew the budget because like they were like, oh, you get 10 minutes. And I took like 14. 14 minutes of your life you'll never get back.
Yeah, man.
Not even 15, but 14 minutes.
You went
your
into
life.
The business for yourself. That's what that term when you like when you're – producer or whatever it gives you the time and you go over, it's like you're going into the business for yourself.
Exactly. So I enjoyed that so much, and I think that was when the seed was planted. But of course life churns on, there's no like time or availability to do stand-up comedy. However, in August, when I knew my corporate career was ending, was somewhat impulsive, but I went online. I was just like, I'm going to do a stand-up comedy class. It was like just kind of popped in my brain. Mm-hmm. And I signed up for it, and I went through with it. And, it, you know, it was real. I'm glad I did it.
And you're really doing more stand-up classes again?
Have
you had, like, a set yet or no?
Well, I did a friends and family event on November 3rd in New York City at a comedy club. And there were, like, 40 people in the crowd. There were five of us who were in the class who all did our thing. And then there were some other, you know, comedians there. It was a great event. And then I've done stand-up mic in town here a couple times.
Nice. Hell yeah. We got a few friends that do stand-up comedy. Miles works at the Laugh Factory, so, right. You know, one of these days we'll get you in there. I feel like people have told me I should do stand-up. I disagree only because I feel like you really have to know me for me to make you laugh. Like, I can't just walk up and make random people laugh. Maybe I can. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking about it too much. But it is something I've always wanted to, like, attempt to try is, like, doing the stand-up comedy. Who's your favorite stand-up comedian?
Well, oh, geez, let me see. I'd say old school is probably George Carlin.
Yeah, I figured you were going to say Carlin.
More recent times, I really like Chappelle because there's just something about that guy, man. He makes me laugh. And he does stand-up. His skit comedy is my favorite, though.
Yeah, like, but the Chappelle show is so fucking funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we could go. He just, with the Prince one, and he did the, I mean, between Prince and, you know, the Rick James, I mean, those are just classic. But my teacher, the interesting thing about though is that he taught a lot of technique of how to write jokes. Like, I always came into it thinking, like, oh, I'm going to tell some big 5-minute story and get a laugh at the end. But he's like, no, every 10 to 20 seconds, you have to, like, make people laugh. So it's a lot of short one-liners, and you could thread themes together. But, like, he taught us a lot of really good, first of all, let's start with, like, writing techniques, how to write stand-up comedy, because I had no clue. I've never done it. I had no clue. And then the second piece, he probably taught us 2 or 3 major things. The other piece was then delivery. And delivery's hard because, for me, I'm used to having the PowerPoint crutch. You know, I could look through my charts and present on screen. It's like 5 minutes straight of, like, you know, memorization and delivering. I mean, you guys are do acting, so you know about that more than I do. But that was terrifying for me.
All right, Alan. So where can the people find you?
Well, my website is almost up and running, and it's going to be my email is alan@alanetticsconsulting.com.
You're the first person to drop their email, like, when I asked that question.
Email, because my website will be released probably later this week.
We got to have an Instagram, though.
Finishing touches. I do not. Well,
you got to make one.
I have an Instagram for me personally.
You have to make, I'm telling you, you got to have an Instagram. As much as I fucking hate Instagram, you kind
of
need one.
I would honestly just change the name of your personal account to. You could do that, because if you don't really use, you're not a big Instagram guy.
Not really.
Except for your business.
Not really, no. But I take your advice. Like, I have Facebook, but I've been advised to, like, have a Facebook account for my business. You're saying Instagram for my business. I'm mostly living in website and LinkedIn right now. But, yeah, I would expand that.
Got to be, especially because a lot of the type of clients and the type of audience you want to build, I think, is super important. Like, most young people or independent business owners, that millennial crowd, like, we're in a very social media-based thing, which goes back to what you're talking about with, like, community and all that jazz. And the network is the community. Don't look at. So social media is a very, like, casual but semi-professional way to connect with people. So I highly recommend it. We have 2 Instagram accounts, and I hate both of them. Follow us if you don't. Alan, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, it was awesome.
This was hella fun. Joe Linksman, if you're listening, sorry, he asked first. We'll get you on, I promise. He's going to be so pissed when he's like, well, Alan before me, because he got mad when we had Greg before him. So sorry, Joe. I swear to God. You're the last person left of the Linksman list, so.
He's in queue. The other thing I will say just before we part two is the way I'm trying to build my local connections is I just recently joined the Orange County Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
And I don't really – I know their salesperson, Cheryl Cohen, was outstanding. So my first point of entry was really good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to get to more of those events. And I think that could be a good – opportunity to bring people in to do podcasts too. But I'm still in the very early stages of building that network piece, but hopefully down the road, you know, I'll have some relationships and we can bring them in and, you know, talk about their business as opposed to going 2D with, like, a Zoom or whatever.
Hell yeah.
So
all right All right. Well, Alan, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Everybody, if you stay to the end, like, subscribe, leave a review of the podcast on Apple Music or Spotify or on YouTube. Please, even if you hated this episode, tell me. I'm so tired of nobody commenting on it. It's like, you can tell me that I'm going bald. I will like that comment so hard. Thank you, Spencer. And this has been, this is this thing that I do. The end of the episode.
Go in peace.
All right.
Cool.
Cut it.